Well, get up to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at the pictures of the giant crystals of Mexico. Amazing. We'll be talking with Leila Hutchison next about these and many others next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Leila Hutchison is a graduate gemologist, explorer, researcher, author. She is the first American woman to explore the deadly crystal caves in Mexico. Her research has been presented in cities of the United States, Mexico, and Europe. She's been interviewed on several radio shows by hosts such as our friend Shirley MacLaine, and recently filmed an interview with Mexico's top ufologist, Jaime Mausson. And here she is on Coast to Coast. Leila, looking forward to this.
Good evening, George. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm just really thrilled for the opportunity to be with you tonight and just share all this exciting and fascinating information about the Crystal Caves of Mexico.
How did we come across these caves?
This is interesting. Okay, so in April of 2000, the Delgado brothers were miners working for the Pinoles Mining Company from Mexico City, and they were assigned to look for a vein of lead, zinc, or silver in a 200-year-old working mine south of Chihuahua, Mexico. It was in Nica. And at 1,000 feet below the surface, as they were boring the tunnel into the mine, there was a kind of a hole, a pocket in the bedrock. And they stopped the machinery, and they got out, and they peered into what astonished them, because what they saw growing were almost 40-foot tall crystals.
Jeez.
With 100% humidity and a temperature of 136 degrees and slowly dropping. They were astonished to see these. And there's absolutely no light, so all they had was their flashlights and their miners' helmets. And it looked like a shattered mirror of reflection of light when their flashlight shone upon it. So that was the beginning. And they had no clue that this would become the most fascinating cave in the world that people are interested in.
And tell us the significance of crystal and the fact that this crystal was so big. What does that mean to us?
What does it mean that it's so big? Well, why it's so remarkable is that these largest crystals on the planet have never been found anywhere else. Okay, so that's the first thing. And the growth, they're the slowest growth crystal in the world. That means they grow 1 millimeter. No, they grow the width of one hair, a human hair, I believe, in 1 year. So they've estimated it to be over 1 million years, and now this
at least.
Well, they thought, but see, now, like, quartz crystal is, you know, you can find quartz crystal that's over 200 million years old. But the selenite grew fast. So they grew fast because of a fascinating, I would say, geology underneath there. And that was a massive aquifer that was heated by a pinch of magma. And the magma, as it heated up the hydrothermal chemistry of the water, it created these massive crystals to grow off the walls. So they were completely submerged. They grew out of water, and they were submerged in water. And then in 2000, after 30 years of continuously deflooding the mine, they had sat there in a steamy cavern waiting to be found. And in 2000, the Delgado brothers, that's what they did. They punched that hole into bedrock, and they found them just steaming in this extraordinary, most hostile working environment in the world.
Are they worth a lot of money?
No.
They aren't.
No, they're not worth a lot of money. And that is...
So it's not like it's finding a big diamond or anything like that.
No, and it's not like, you know, as we know, China has just been buying up all of the minerals and the quartz crystals coming out of Arkansas and Brazil, and, you know, using them industrially, and who knows what all the other applications that they have them for, besides how beautiful they are.
Now, why did science start getting interested in these giant crystals?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think the The biggest, most important fact is they're looking for life on other planets, and they want to know how it started. And so with the cause of astrobiology really coming online, is that is understanding these little creatures that are all over our planet called microbes. They're inside us, George. In fact, for every cell that you have, we have 10 times that much in microbes in our bodies. So you can imagine how the Earth, it's a perfect place in this hostile environment to find strange microbes that could be a match. In fact, the first documentary of the National Geographic television on the Into the Lost Crystals and the Deadly Crystal Caves in 2008, Chris McCabe was on the team, a NASA researcher, and he was inputting data from these caves into the Mars rover. That was what it was all about. So they're looking for a match of these microbes that could be on Mars and giving us some kind of idea how these microbes can sustain life in very hostile environments.
Now, these microbes, are they dangerous if they get out into society or not?
Well, I don't think it's really that. I think where the danger might be is it's again this muddy relationship that we possibly have of contamination, cross contamination. If we send a space shuttle to Mars, how do we prevent contamination of our own earthly microbes to be mixed in with Mars? And how do we know when Mars comes back it doesn't have microbes and it mixes with Earth?
Sure, contamination too, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the big question. And by the way, I'm really excited to tell you this, that at the end of March, I had the privilege of meeting the director of NASA's Astrobiology Institute.
That's Penelope Boston, right?
Correct. Yeah. And it was wonderful to meet with her because she's the only other first woman I know that had explored those caves, but she did that 8 years after I was already there. And I wanted to show her the earliest images, which are found in my book, Journey into the Giant Selenite Crystal Caves in Mexico. That's rare images, these first images that they had no idea, no clue how to take. But back to Dr. Boston, what was so fascinating to meet with her was that she had taken water bubbles, the water inside these crystals that had been laying there for over at least a half a million years, and took it back to the lab and reanimated the microbes. And this is what they found. They found some of the strangest, weirdest microbes that have never been found on planet Earth before. That's not to say that they came from outer space, but they had never found a match for them on Earth. And the closest it came was 10% of a DNA relative to making as close to mushrooms looking like humans. Does that make any sense? Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
As weird as it seems.
Yeah, it's weird. And so I asked her about that. I said, well, you've got this paper. It's not peer-reviewed. It's on its way to be. And there's the debate would be the age. They think the age of these microbes are over 50,000 years old.
And they were dormant for that long?
Yeah, and they were living. That's right.
Like in hibernation?
Yes, George, very good. They're like in hibernation. They just, what they do is they were doing something like photosynthesis, but it was called chemosynthesis. And they were actually eating the metals and the minerals off the walls of the caves to stay alive.
The microbes were?
Yep.
Wow.
And that's another fascinating thing. Everything on this earth gets energy from something else. So everything eats everything, so to speak.
You have traveled quite a bit these days. And
I have.
in the past, you've gone all over the desert, all over areas in Mexico. Tell me about the significance of UFO sightings out there as well.
Oh.
What does that have to do with some of this?
Okay. All right. So that's a bigger story, but this is the one that really comes in from 15, 16 years of research.
All right.
So when I went into the Crystal Caves in January of 2001, I came out of there, I felt changed. If you can imagine, it was 128 degrees and 100% humidity, and
That would kill you, wouldn't it?
It would kill you. But it didn't kill us. We were in there, I want to say up to 42 minutes in the smaller cave, which is now called the Queen's Eye. We called it the Cave of Dreams. And our job was, and very difficult, was to go in and explore those caves and see how far they went. Now, can you imagine you're crawling all over these crystals and people can see those pictures in my book? Very, very difficult to do, and without becoming exhausted and going unconscious. So I don't know how we managed it, but in the first cave, we did that, our exploration team. And when I came out of those caves, it was like it changed my life. And it was like, not only is this so incredible, I'll never forget it, I haven't. It's like, what does it really mean? I mean, we didn't have any information back then, George, not any about what the implications that this might have.
Well, you were starting from scratch, that's why.
That's right, we were. And just the fact that Dr. Boston, you know, what they found was microbes that they never found before? Really?
But you had UFO sightings, too.
Okay,
What happened?
I started looking at the longitude and latitude of NICA, and I started to track the northern, I call it like, think of it as an equidistant cross, and I called it the northern armature. Does that make sense to you? Like south, east, north, and west, these different points on this, on the map where NICA is ground zero. And because I was born in El Paso, Texas, you can imagine, I mean, we had a home up in Roswell. We had friends in Roswell. We lived in Ruidoso and Cloudcroft, and we played in the sands and white sands. So, and that was all happening in the 50s and 60s. So we were right there in the middle of all of that, all of it. And my family had moved there in the 40s in the area. So I started to track a bunch of stuff, and I realized that what I called this, and I'm collaborating with Ruben Uriarte, and
good guy, by the way.
And he told me to tell you hello tonight.
Super.
And Noe Torres, the book is entitled Mysteries into the Chihuahuan Desert. What happened? We were fascinated to see correlate our findings and our different research. So, of course, what came up was, do you remember the Koyami incident?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that is, when I tell you, did I see a flying UFO over NICA? No. Are you kidding? I did not see.
But there were a lot of reports that people did.
Well, let me just tell you what just came out in the just last week. There was a guy named Iberto Rivera in Chihuahua, and he is...
Your Spanish accent is perfect.
On that one. He is, thank you. He's a UFO investigator, and I just found out today that last week they had three animal mutilations.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, in Chihuahua. And it was in these small ranchers' properties, and they found this lamb that was hung up in a pine tree. Now, what does that sound like?
Yeah, and lambs don't climb trees.
They don't climb trees, but we have heard of these UFOs taking these animals up, right?
We've heard it about cows and things like that, too.
Mm-hmm, I know. And the report was that this lamb was hanging a pine tree 22 feet above the ground, and it had no eyes or no lips.
Perfectly taken out.
Yes, perfectly taken out. So there's a lot of strangest, high strangest in this area, And I mean, I've got a whole list of them, but the Koyami, let's go back to Koyami so that our listeners, your listeners, can know a little bit more about what happened. Because this is not my expertise, because the crystals and gemology, that's my expertise.
That's what you do and do well.
Yes. And so the rest of this is just really, you know, what I've documented.
But it's all tied together.
It's all tied together because it's these mysteries and strange phenomena that's happening in the Chihuahua Desert. The Koyami incident was a very high-flying disc that collided with a single-prop engine plane that had left El Paso. They were Mexican nationals, and they were flying back to Mexico City out of El Paso. It was around midnight. And the military Air Force picked up on radar a very high-flying disc. I'm sorry, I can't remember the altitude, but it was extraordinary. And how fast it was flying, it was stepping it down every 5 minutes, something like 20,000 feet. And all of a sudden, it took like a 90-degree angle and went out of over Presidio, Texas, into the Chihuahuan Desert. And the next thing we heard by the Mexican military that there was a downed craft in Koyami. This is just about an hour and a half west of Presidio, Texas. And so the really strange part about this is that there was a lot of tug-of-war between the military of Mexico and Fort Bliss and the CIA that got involved in this. And I think who wrote something about this because of alien viruses. Now we're really tying it in. Alien viruses with Robert Wood. Mm-hmm. You know that book?
I know that book, and he's a great researcher.
Yeah, he's amazing. And Nick Redfern. And he also did a whole chapter on the Chihuahua Mexico crash. But apparently what had happened once this crash had happened, the CIA intervened anyway.
But don't they think that the Cessna, the little plane that crashed with this UFO, might have been hauling drugs?
Yes, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, being from El Paso and the cartel and back then, absolutely. And this was an
and how ironic
yeah.
to collide with a UFO.
Yeah. Is that amazing? So let me just say, this is what Robert Wood had said in his about his report. The recovery team had assembled and had been staged at Fort Bliss, Texas. Several helicopters were flown in from some unknown source and assembled in a secured area. These helicopters were painted a neutral sand color, and they were Hueys. And the satellite and reconnaissance aircraft overflight that day indicated that both the crash disc and the civilian aircraft had been removed from the crash sites and loaded on flatbed trucks.
Sound familiar with Roswell, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Almost.
CIA had to make a choice, either to allow the unknown craft to stay in the hands of the Mexican government or to launch a recovery team to take the craft away from them. So basically the gist of this story is...
And this was 1974, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
That when they showed up, all of the military personnel, the Mexican military personnel were dead.
They were dead?
They were dead.
What happened to them?
They don't know. They don't know.
Like radiation or something?
Something with the craft. There were, but they were had all been dead, and they, the United States... they think is that they used a suitcase bomb and nuked the whole area, there, including the dead bodies out of the single-prop engine
plane. Jeez, what a
story.
Well, hold on for a second, Lila. We're going to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about this. Plus, I want you to share stories about giants in that area and so much more on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Lila Hutchison is with us. We're talking about giant crystals discovered in Chihuahua, Mexico. Amazing discovery. Now we're talking about some UFO cases that happened in that area, too. Can you tie the two together, Lila, the crystals and the UFOs, or they? Would you say they're separate cases?
Well, they're separate cases, George. I think really what I want to put together with all of these different, and I've got a list of 15 or 20 amazing things that have happened, mysteries in the Chihuahuan Desert, that I was going to give you my summary of this is that where I'm really going with it, that there must be something in this 200,000 square miles of desert. The Chihuahuan Desert is the largest desert in North America. And we've had, as you know, many, many sightings in this area from Texas to New Mexico and Mexico. What if there is something out there? And that, whether it's the Marfa lights or the Zone of Silence.
Mm-hmm. Which we'll get into, too. I need you to explain that later.
Okay. Thank you. I will do that. That might be leading to, and we've heard a lot of this with Corey Good as well. What if there is something underground besides crystals?
Explain.
Well, what if it could be an alien underground base?
Well, there's a lot of people think that.
Yeah.
And they look, I've talked to people who think they're either earthbound reptilians. As a matter of fact, there's a theory that they were dinosaurs that evolved.
Yeah.
Their brains evolved, they stood upright, and they became intelligent beings over 65 million years. Hey, you know what? Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? And then other people think, no, there's an extraterrestrial base under there, and that they're coming and going as they please. So okay, that's another possibility. But the fact that they're being seen in this area and strange things are happening there, yeah, you know what? I'm not a believer in coincidence. I think things happen for a reason.
Okay, well, let's tie it into a couple things here.
All right, go ahead.
The crystals, if you look at an energy power, you know, on a metaphysical side, selenite is really perceived to be as a transmitter and receiver of data. Okay? I wish I had a piece and I could just put it in your hand right now, and I would show you how beautiful this is. It's very heavy. You've seen the crystals in the pictures.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
They're gorgeous.
By the way, were you afraid that they were going to collapse on you?
A lot of things. I was so altered as well. I mean, all you could think about is your very survival. You could barely breathe in that kind of
temperature. Oh, my God. And I mean, it's like glass, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it's brittle. As it dries out, it gets brittle because gypsum or selenite crystals are on the Mohs scale, which is the scale of hardness of things, is a 2. So it's just a little bit harder than talcum powder. So what that means is that you could actually, with your fingernail, put a scratch in the selenite crystal. Now, on the other hand, there's striations in the selenite crystal that look like fiber optics. Okay, so that's where I'm going with this. It's like, I think they have the ability to pick up signals. Now, check this out. Corey Good just did another one of his videos, and this is what he said. At one point, we were taken to a crystal cavern MyLab experiment. It looked like a trans system to an underground where submarines were sitting in a cavern area, and the subs took us in 1981 to 1983 underwater. And Corey said he ended up where they were in similar caves found in Nica, Mexico. Huge crystals. He also said it was 140 degrees and hooked up to equipment to monitor.
Gosh, much like what you've said in terms of temperature.
Yes, measuring something. They wanted us to interface with the crystals, not to touch them. They could harm us. Corey started to see a pink aura around the crystal, and Corey got a download. And he remembered off to the back of the crystal cavern, a very tall being in a similar suit he and the other children were wearing. And all he could see was the being's eyes and nose. And the eyes were luminous blue with alabaster white skin. With trying to remember his memories, We were told these crystals had a life force, and we connected with them, and they download information into us. We were then uploaded or had removal of this data from our physical self. Wow.
Now, tell me about the possibility of giants being found in that area, bones being found.
Okay.
Tie that in.
I will. So if this could possibly be this area, could be a location that UFO activity, maybe the crystals are like a beacon. Okay? Maybe they're a beacon that they're bringing in alien aircraft, and maybe there's a runway. Maybe there's some entrance in that Chihuahuan Desert that people from Marfa, you've heard of the Marfa Lights.
Yep.
Right? You know how they just kind of float these orbs, okay, when they can't really figure it out. Some people say, oh, that's just, you know, cars and their headlights and they're driving down the highway. Okay, but they're there. All right.
All right.
So let's talk about the giants, because that really blew my mind.
Steve Quayle has talked about them, too.
Who did?
Stephen Quayle, one of our guests.
Yeah.
But he talked about them in Afghanistan. You've got them here in this cave area.
Well, and yeah, L.A. Marzulli, he's also
digging
it up in Catalina Island as well. They're all over the place.
So what did they discover out there?
Okay, so here's what I found in my research. Well, first of all, probably the most popular one that we know about is Lloyd Pye, right? The Star Child skull.
I miss him, too. God love him.
I miss him.
And rest his soul.
Yeah. So I thought this was interesting because I'm from El Paso. He claimed to obtain the skull from Ray and Melanie Young of El Paso, Texas in February in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And that this skull was found by a young girl. She was on vacation with her parents in Copper Canyon. The Copper Canyon is where NICA is located. So NICA is called this NICA Sierra Madre. It's part of the system of Copper Canyon. So
it's all connected.
It's all connected. Yeah. And they've been mining way before the Spaniards ever showed up in the 1500s. So this girl had gone into one of these abandoned mine tunnels. And what she saw laying there was a skull, and actually, I'm sorry, a full adult skeleton. And then she saw there was a bone sticking out, and she started to dig into the earth, and there was a smaller skeleton with a misshapen skull.
Oh, boy.
Okay, and that's how it started. And this was 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua, Mexico.
Where would these bones be now?
Who knows? All I know is that the skull was taken to El Paso, and that Ray and Melanie Young, you know, procured the skull from these people, because this was 1930s. And then most recently, the Stanford Research Institute had...
And you can't get much better than that.
You can't. Which has the world's most powerful scanner at its disposal, was able to confirm the presence of red fibers in the skull. Okay, and something very distinct. It was like rebar.
This is like Goliath in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, what is the zone of silence?
Well, hold on. I got a couple more. Do you want to hear some more giant stories?
Oh, you have more? Okay.
I got a couple more because they're pretty fascinating.
All right.
All right, so let me get to this. Have you ever heard of the Tarahumara Indians?
The Tarahumara.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Okay. These are, I'm sure some of your listeners do, but I spent some time with Tarahumara Indians in Copper Canyon in 1997, and I was there with Peter Essex of National Geographic Magazine filming these guys playing their ball games. These are the fastest runners, some of the fastest runners on Earth. They are known to run 100 miles at a time without taking a break. Right? They can run deer down to the point of exhaustion.
Huh. Get them in the Olympics.
Well, they have been. They have been in some ultra long distance races in Los Angeles.
Oh, really? Do they win?
Yeah. Smoking cigarettes.
They run smoking cigarettes?
Yeah, they have to break while everybody else is doing electrolytes. They have a cigarette.
Jeez.
They're incredible. These are incredible indigenous tribe, the Tarahumaras. And that's actually Nyka is a Rumari term. That's the language that the Tarahumaras speak. That means the place of shade or rest. So Nyka is a Tarahumara term. And these guys living in Copper Canyon, okay, this is all connected because of the mining. So you got the skull, the skull child, and then the next one is, I'm going to read this to you. It's called the Washington Post, June 21st, 1925. Giant human skeletons measuring from 10 to 12 feet have been discovered by prospecting miners in a new gold and silver district in the mountains of the state of Chihuahua.
Here we go. Wow.
The miners say they found a group of the skeletons intact in a hidden cave. The feet measured from 18 to 20 inches. A human male with a shoe size of 13 has an approximately 12-inch foot.
That's a big foot.
That's a big foot. It is felt that the find may clear up the present doubtful origin of the Chihuahua Indians, Tarahumara. The discovery was made near the village of Sisaguchi. The skeletons were in a sitting position, the shoulders and arms bending forward and resting on the upraised knees. And in this position, they measured from the top of the skull to the ground to be 6 feet at that point.
Jeez.
Amazing, right? Remember, that's when all the newspapers, we could get this information before they censored everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so the next one, and this is really cool. Boston, May 3rd. This is also around the turn of the century. Charles C. Clapp, who has recently returned from Mexico, where he has been in charge of Thomas W. Lawson's mining interests, has called the attention to a remarkable discovery. He found in Mexico a cave containing some 200 skeletons of men, each above 8 feet in height. The cave was evidently the burial place of a race of giants who antedated from the Aztecs. I think that's all speculation. Mr. Clapp arranged the bones of one of these skeletons and found the total length to be 8 to 11 inches. The femur reached up to his thigh, and the molars were big enough to crack a coconut. The head measured from 18 inches from front to back. And what makes this so interesting is in this area, they found in these baskets, these burial, wrapped up like mummies, these giants. And, George, they had gold robes on with little triangles that were woven in, 26,000 dotted, like dots on each robe, these saffron robes. They counted them, 26,000 of them.
Pictures? Anybody get pictures?
Not that we're going to get. I'm sure they did. Maybe they're at the Smithsonian. What do you think?
Well, I've heard that. That's very possible, but not out for the public to see. That's for sure.
No.
Locked down below. And well, you know, all these things are possible. A couple minutes before the break, zone of silence.
Okay, you want me to get the zone of silence?
I want to know, what is that?
Well, okay. Well, this is about 30 miles of an area near Coahuila, Durango, and Chihuahua, the states. It's called the Trino Vertex. So where three of these places come together and join. This zone of silence is a place where no radio signals, no television signals, nothing is found in this. You can receive any kind of signals whatsoever. So why this is such an amazing place where rockets go off course and meteors fall, there's tremendous debris of meteors scattered all over the surface. and they have found a huge or a very high content of magnetite.
And you think that has something to do with throwing these missiles off course?
I do, and you know, let's go back to the Roswell rock, right? You talked about that the other night?
Uh-huh.
Remember where they took, you know, a magnetometer? I think that's how you say it. It's a magnet meter. And they took that little rock and they had it spinning one way or the other, depending on which end they were turning it. Linda Moulton Howe was talking about that as well in one of your earlier ones. So I think it's because that area, and even in Roswell, remember that's all to Chihuahuan Desert, that rock could have derived from a high content of this magnetite. So this zone of silence, what is it? It's located in the ancient ocean called the Sea of Thetis.
Hold on for a second. We're at the break. We'll come back and talk more, and we'll open up the phone lines next on Coast to Coast AM.